Wake up, it's the Saturday Morning Podcast. Let mom and dad sleep in and come back with me to the 80s. Let's grab a bowl of raisins, rice, and rye, or breakfast with Barbie cereal, and flip on the tube. I've got the TV guide and hours of nothing to do. My name is Chris, and I love all the Saturday morning cartoons. When I was a kid, I lived for Saturday mornings. Now that I'm an adult, I want to relive all those great shows and see how they came about. Let's take a deep dive back to the 80s and see what's waiting. Rewind! With this key, you unlock the door of imagination. Is it the Twilight Zone? No, because behind this door is not a bookworm without time to read or monsters coming to Maple Street. It's kids, a whole bunch of them from a wide variety of species. Wait, what? That's right, this is the story of a frog, a pig, a bear, and a whatever as they play nice and use their imaginations to go anywhere. They make their dreams come true, and they'll do the same for you. So close your eyes and make believe as we explore the imaginary world of Jim Henson's Muppet Babies.
Everything all right in here?
Yes, Nanny.
Saturday's the place. That's what CBS wanted everyone to know in the fall of 1984. A giant TV with legs and arms adjusted its antennas with lightning bolts coming out of it. Inside the picture tube were a bunch of smaller tubes, each with a cartoon inside. For the 1984 season, CBS was sporting five new shows. Three of them centered around talking animals, one was based on a video game, and the last was a live-action series featuring comedian Richard Pryor. The video game show was likely to develop to complement Saturday Supercade and was based on the game Pole Position. The talking animals consisted of the Get Along Gang, Shirt Tales, and Muppet Babies. Of all the shows to premiere that season, only Muppet Babies would make it into the 90s. The series took place in the kids' nursery, but the Muppet Babies could go anywhere through the power of their imaginations. The nursery was run by Nanny, a pair of green stocking legs whose face was never seen. She took care of the kids and checked in from time to time. The leader of the Muppets was Kermit the Frog. Due to his amphibious nature, he wears a sailor suit. He's best friends with Fozzie and constantly running from Piggy, who has a crush on him. During the fantasies he and the others have, he tends to take the lead. He's played many famous roles, including James Bond, Indiana Jones, and Sherlock Holmes. As most toddlers have, Baby Piggy has a bad attitude. She's trained in the martial arts and doesn't hesitate to karate chop those she doesn't agree with. She's in love with Kermit, who runs away from the affection. On the other hand, little blue weirdo Gonzo pines for Piggy, and she's constantly brushing him off to the side. Piggy's dream is to grow up to be a movie star. She fantasizes about wearing dark sunglasses, riding in limos, and showing up to premieres. To impress others, she speaks a smattering of French. When she's scared or needs a little security, she turns to her stuffed animal, Dolly. Fuzzy Bear is a quick wit with a joke that usually bombs or falls apart. But his friends like him just the same. He usually carries around a teddy bear named Teddy. When the fantasies start, Fozzie is usually scared of ghosts, monsters, thunder, lightning, and swimming. When a joke of Fozzie's really bombs, it's not unusual for one or more tomatoes to plaster his face. Gonzo is a blue little weirdo, his species unclear. What is very clear is that he's got an unnatural love of chickens. There's a picture of the farm bird on his jumper. He carries a plush yellow chicken named Camilla, and he imagines her to be real. Gonzo's got a crush on Piggy, but the feelings are never returned. Though, over time, we see that Piggy really does care about Gonzo. Just not romantically. While opening doors or turning corners, it's typical of Gonzo to find unexpected dangers, such as screaming trains or a big monster. Because Gonzo doesn't know his species, he goes through identity crisis from time to time. Rolf is the piano-playing dog often found at the ivory keys of his prized toy piano. Because he's musical in nature, he often encourages the others to break into song. And, unless our records are wrong, Rolf is the oldest of all the Muppet babies in the nursery. Scooter and Skeeter are a set of twin brother and sister siblings. They both wear glasses and have orange hair. Skeeter has a long-standing rivalry with Piggy and tends to be athletic and tomboy-like. Scooter is a nerd able to work his computer to find information the others need. Scooter, in contrast to Skeeter, only has two strands of hair on his head. While Skeeter has more hair, Scooter can boast he's older than his sister by a minute. Animal is a force of nature and would probably tear the nursery apart if left alone. He's the youngest of all the Muppet babies and sports a white baby bonnet. Speaking in fragmented words, Animal always gets the last word at the end of every episode. He, and typically Gonzo, appear in post-credit sequences where Animal is messing around and Gonzo gets hurt or humiliated. It's at this point where Animal utters his trademark line, "Go bye-bye!" The idea for Muppet Babies came up in the early 1980s. The concept came from Michael Frith, a longtime collaborator of Muppet creator Jim Henson. The idea was to roll back the clocks on the Muppets' ages and allow them to be children. In this way, they would be more identifiable to younger children and teach messages that were moral or educational. Actor-director Frank Oz, known for voicing Miss Piggy and Fozzie Bear, did not like the idea. So the concept floated around for some time while the Muppet movies were being made. When The Muppets Take Manhattan was in production, the idea was inserted into a fantasy sequence brought on by Miss Piggy. The bovine companion wondered to Kermit what life might have been like had all the Muppets met as kids. The sequence that followed showed us just that. The audience got to see Kermit, Piggy, Gonzo, Fozzie, Rolf, and Scooter as babies. The sequence took place in a nursery not too dissimilar from what viewers of the Muppet Babies TV show would find on a weekly basis. Around the time the movie was filmed, production started on the animated show. Jim Henson partnered with Marvel Productions to bring the baby fiction to life. To understand how the Muppets came to be on Saturday morning, you have to go all the way back to where the Muppets came from. For that, you have to look to James Maury Henson, born September 24, 1936, in Greenville, Mississippi. He was the younger child of Paul, who worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and Betty. In the late 1940s, his family moved to the Washington, D.C. area. Growing up, young Jim was influenced by the ventriloquism act of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. On television, he watched Bert Hillstrom's puppets such as Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. In 1954, he started attending Northwestern High School and working for local television station WTOP. His interest in puppetry landed him a job at the station working on the Junior Morning Show, a local Saturday morning show for kids. After high school, Henson went on to attend the University of Maryland. He majored in studio arts, but changed his major to home economics. The home ec classes furthered his interest in textiles and crafts. As a freshman in college, Henson created the 5-minute show Sam and Friends for local channel WRC. The show featured what would become the prototypes of the Muppets, including Kermit the Frog. Henson's contribution to the art of television puppetry was that he used the frame of the screen to breathe more life into the characters. Puppet shows on television were just that, puppet shows like you'd see in a park. Henson worked under the puppet, an area the home viewer couldn't see. He also used more flexible materials such as felt and foam rubber instead of the traditional wood puppets. While at the University of Maryland, Henson asked fellow student Jay Nebel to assist him with his shows. After graduation, Henson toured Europe to see how the puppet masters overseas performed their shows. Once back in America, he started to date Jane, and the two married in 1959. Throughout the 1960s, Henson brought his puppets to the variety shows of the time, such as Steve Allen and Ed Sullivan. Appearing on such popular shows gave Henson and his creations greater exposure. He was soon using his puppets in commercials. His approach to hawking products was to be memorable and make people laugh. Triggering emotion would connect the viewers to the product. In 1963, Jim and Jane Henson moved to New York and started the company Muppets Incorporated. Jane would quit performing to raise their children and was replaced by Frank Oz as an assistant. Henson hired writer Jerry Jewell to bring personality to the Muppets. Henson would even recognize Oz and Jewell as significant contributors to the Muppets' success. While performing, Henson and Oz formed a close friendship. The two men often performed together and formed a comedy duo. It was evident when the two performed as Bert and Ernie, Kermit and Piggy, or Kermit and Fozzie. The two had chemistry and it showed on the small screen. The popularity of the Muppets was evident by Henson's many appearances on The Jimmy Dean Show. For the cowboy talk show host, Henson devised a piano-playing dog named Rolf. It was a high-water mark for the Muppets and won over audiences for its humor. When Jim Henson formed Muppets Inc., he offered Jimmy Dean 40% in his company as a thank you for giving his creations exposure. Dean turned down the offer and said that all of Henson's rewards should be his and not shared. For the rest of his life, Dean never regretted his decision to turn down such a generous gift. In 1969, producer Joan Ganz Cooney at the Children's Television Workshop was enamored with the Muppets. She liked the high quality of the puppets and approached Henson to start an educational show for children. The Muppets would be the star, and Sesame Street was born. Sesame Street became so successful, it allowed Henson to stop producing commercials. While characters like Cookie Monster, Big Bird, and the rest were present, Henson incorporated Kermit into the mix as a roving reporter. For a brief time in the 1970s, the Muppets were part of Saturday Night Live on a regular basis. However, Henson had problems using his Muppets to bring the scripts written by Saturday Night Live's writers to life. He felt it didn't gel well with what the Muppets were. The writers of SNL felt the same, and some even refused to write sketches for the Muppets. It didn't take long before Henson and Saturday Night Live creator Lorne Michaels parted ways. During this time, Henson developed a Broadway show for the Muppets, as well as a concept for a weekly series. Shopping the show around, it was rejected by all the network. The executives believed that the Muppets would only appeal to kids, missing the bigger picture. Henson did find a financial investor in Lou Grade. With money available, Henson and company moved to the United Kingdom to produce The Muppet Show. It would be on the syndicated series that the characters of the Muppets were expanded past Kermit. Soon, the amphibian host would share the spotlight with the likes of Miss Piggy, Gonzo the Great, Fozzie Bear, and Animal, among others. The Muppets became a phenomenon with adults and children alike. By 1979, they were ready to make the transition to the big screen. When the Muppet movie made money and introduced the world to the song Rainbow Connection, it was inevitable that a sequel was coming. And it did in 1981 with The Great Muppet Caper. The sequel was directed by Henson himself. In the years that followed, Henson started to develop movies like The Dark Crystal, moving away from the lovable Muppets. The darker, edgier movie was directed by Frank Oz, and it did well at the box office. In 1984, The Muppets Take Manhattan was greenlit and put in the hands of Frank Oz as director. During the filming of the Baby Muppet sequence, Henson felt it was time to bring this version of Kermit and Fozzie to life, and he would do so on the small screen. With Marvel Productions backing Muppet Babies, Henson brought in Hank Sorayan, a voice director from Hanna-Barbera. While Henson created the show, it was writer Jeffrey Scott who developed it, wrote the series Bible, and wrote the first episode. In fact, Scott was so enthusiastic about the series that he wrote the first season. This set the tone for the show and all the episodes to follow. With production underway and a release date 2 months after The Muppets Take Manhattan hit theaters, all they had to do was assemble the perfect cast. Frank Welker, a versatile voiceover artist since the late 60s, landed the role of Kermit on Muppet Babies. Welker, or Dr. Frankenwelker as he's sometimes known, originated the role of Fred Jones on Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Back in 1969. He worked steadily for Hanna-Barbera through the 70s. When Disney and Ruby Spears entered into Saturday morning territory, Welker found himself flush with work. He was known for his uncanny ability to mimic animal sounds. He was also known for voicing multiple characters on the shows he was on, and Muppet Babies was no exception. In addition to voicing Kermit, he was also Beaker and Skeeter after Howie Mandel left the show. At the time Muppet Babies premiered, Welker was involved in at least a dozen series and movies. Unlike The Muppet Show, Piggy wasn't voiced by a man on Muppet Babies. Actress Lori O'Brien voiced Piggy. She was a relative newcomer to the world of voiceovers. She had landed her first voice job the year before, providing additional voices on Dungeons & Dragons. O'Brien, hailing from Colorado, started her acting career in the 1982 film Time Rider: The Adventures of Lyle Swan. She appeared in iconic 80s shows of the time, including Dynasty and Knight Rider. Sacramento-born actor Greg Berg voiced Fozzie, the bear who couldn't tell a joke to save his life. Born in 1960, Berg started his career in 1982 with the television series The Book of List, where he played both Alexander Haig and Gerald Ford. Before playing Kermit's best friend, Berg appeared on Chips and had a voice credit as the Larry Fine robot in Revenge of the Nerds. Russie Taylor was born May 4, 1944 in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She started in voice work on the uncredited role of Ted and Georgette's baby on The Mary Tyler Moore Show. In 1980, she voiced the title character in the World of Strawberry Shortcake TV special. She performed on Pac-Man and Saturday Supercade before being cast as Gonzo on Muppet Babies. From time to time, Taylor also voiced Tadpole Robin, Kermit's nephew. Katie Lee, the voice of Rolf, was born in Carmel, California in 1958. She was cast in Muppet Babies at the same time she was voicing Sheila the Thief on Dungeons & Dragons. Lee started her voiceover career in 1978, voicing the title character in The Adventures of the Little Prince. She voiced Peggy on the short-lived Pandemonium and provided additional voices on the animated Mork and Mindy. Howard Howie Michael Mandel II started his acting career in the comedy Gas, a film co-written by future Law & Order creator Dick Wolf. He was, as the story goes, discovered when a friend goaded him onto the stage at the Comedy Store. It was amateur night, and Mandel's friends ushered him onto the stage. He was spotted by a producer in the audience, and his career truly started from there. Born in 1955 and hailing from Ontario, Canada, Howie Mandel joined the cast of the highly acclaimed medical drama St. Elsewhere. Mandel was also friends with Frank Welker, and the two ended up on Muppet Babies together. Mandel voiced Animal, Bunsen, and Skeeter. At the same time Muppet Babies was starting, auditions were being held for the film Gremlins. Welker went to the audition and landed the role of the evil gremlin, Stripe. In a classy move, Welker recommended Mandel for Gizmo, and the comedian got the role. Barbara Billingsley, the voice of Nanny, was no stranger to television. Born in Los Angeles in 1915, Billingsley started her acting career in the 1940s. During that time, she appeared mostly uncredited. In 1941, she married Glenn Billingsley. In 1945, the two moved to Los Angeles and Glenn opened a restaurant. In 1957, Billingsley signed a contract with Universal Studios and was quickly cast as June Cleaver on Leave It to Beaver. On that show, she became America's mom. When she joined Muppet Babies as Nanny, she had appeared in Airplane as a jive-talking passenger. She was a seasoned veteran of entertainment and nearly 70 when she joined the animated cast. Muppet Babies was an unusual animated show. Because it dealt with using imagination as an escapism tool, the show used live-action clips mixed with animation. This started as a budgetary constraint, not as a creative move. Also, Jim Henson was friends with George Lucas, and getting permission to show bits from Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark was a matter of a phone call. When Muppet Babies became a hit, it was easy to get other clips from popular movies of the time. Because of the show's popularity, several high-profile people appeared as themselves on the show. Whoopi Goldberg, the hottest newcomer of the 80s, put in an appearance, as did John Ritter from Three's Company and Tom Selleck from Magnum P.I. In a 1989 episode, Stan Lee from Marvel Comics, the producer of Muppet Babies, made an uncredited appearance as himself. Jim Henson even lent his voice in two episodes as Dr. Teeth. It should also be mentioned that Howie Mandel left after two seasons. This left an opening for the characters he voiced. Skeeter was picked up by Frank Welker. That still left Animal and Bunsen that needed another actor to fill Mandel's shoes. Enter Dave Coulier, who not only picked up Mandel's characters, but also voiced Beans Bunny, Janice, and the curmudgeons Statler and Waldorf. Years after the fact, funny man Coulier would recall an incident that occurred during his time on Muppet Babies. As he told CNN in 2011, quote, "In one scene, Fozzie, played by Greg Berg, and Animal had to climb a ladder. As Animal was pushing Fozzie up the ladder, they were making grunting noises. In mid-scene, Greg Berg farted. I looked at Frank Welker and we couldn't contain ourselves. Uncontrollable laughter ensued. I was literally on the floor of the studio laughing," end quote. In a 2016 interview, Coulier recalled that he and Frank Welker weren't allowed to sit together. The two men were known for making each other laugh and ruin takes. Anytime those two got together, trouble was sure to follow. After these messages, we'll be right back with the premiere of Muppet Babies.
Oh, what I wouldn't do to get fruity pebbles from you-know-who. Good day, sir. I'm here to demonstrate...
Oh, my gosh.
The Wonder Bowl. First, something crisp and fruity.
They're fruity pebbles.
Thanks. Fruit-alicious.
Mm. And when will it be a Wonder Bowl?
When you wonder where the pebbles went.
Barney, you're a...
Reveling salesman.
Post Fruity or Cocoa Pebble cereal. Part of this nutritious breakfast. Yabba-dabba-delicious.
Gorgeous pool.
It's not just a pool. It's a bubbling spa.
Love the bubbles.
Bubbling spa.
Fun Gold Malibu Barbie and PJ dolls, each sold separately.
That's fun.
Let me make the bubbles.
Barbie says bubbles tickle her toes.
Quick, catch the ball.
Let's have some punch. But first, pump up those bubbles.
Barbie Bubbling Spa.
Barbie Bubbling Spa comes with everything you see here. Dolls each sold separately. From Mattel.
When you make a great tasting candy, word gets around.
Eat a grumovabits.
You want Reese's Pieces, do you?
Oh, Reese's Pieces.
Oh, oh. Mm. Who in the world was that?
I don't know. kind of looked like your cousin Willard.
Reese's Pieces, with the great peanut butter taste that's out of this world.
This is CBS.
If you watched the premiere of Muppet Babies, the date was September 15th, 1984. The number two song on the American charts was Missing You by John Waite. Households in prime time were tuned in to new series ER, the number one show on television. Ex-Miss America Vanessa Williams was on the cover of People magazine with the caption, "As new, more shocking photos come to light, she tells all for the first time and vows to make good." If you were a kid in 1984, maybe you got up early and got yourself breakfast. Maybe you had a new cereal like a bowl of Apple Raisin Crisp or E.T. cereal. The show starts in the nursery with Kermit riding a Silver Spoons-like train. Skeeter uses a fishing pole to drop a Boxo Weirdo in front of Piggy and Gonzo pops out. The trains turn into a real train from black and white stock footage. Back in the nursery, Scooter's rocking his Apple IIe and Gonzo nerd bullies his head down to the keyboard. The little weirdo opens his closet of mishaps and the Phantom of the Opera is there. Inside his mind. Kermit the Frog sings explains that you can use your imagination and go anywhere, like onto a bowl of cereal, or in a submarine being chased by a shark, or imagine that an anthropomorphic pig is in love with you. Oh no, Kermit doesn't want that. Wake up! Wake up! Why doesn't he wake up? The Muppet Babies build a cardboard wall with a heart and it becomes the series logo. Branding by three-year-olds is how I create new material for my Fiverr.com account. The episode, Noisy Neighbors, starts with another cardboard box. Where are all these boxes coming from in the era before Amazon shipping? Maybe that was the box that the TV with antennas came in. Turns out this box with portholes is an imaginary submarine. When the periscope goes up, it's Gonzo's long blue nose we see at the top of the box. But his nose doesn't have eyes, so they hoist the weirdo through the top to get a good look at enemy action. To use Gonzo as a periscope, Kermit naturally buries his head in Gonzo's chest and places his mouth near Gonzo's crotch. Wait, what? Using the weirdo scope, Kermit envisions a destroyer coming at them. If I were that close to Gonzo's crotch, I'd imagine being anywhere else too. The destroyer is Skeeter, Scooter, and Animal on the couch, flying a flag made from underwear and a stick. Scooter uses a vacuum hose to call the engine room to move the ship ahead. Under the couch, Rolf responds and moves the couch forward to engage the enemy box in battle. And Rolf is getting it done, moving that late 70s solid construction couch across the room. All by himself. Remind me never to get into a fight with Rolf. I bet he could tear my face off. You know, it's always the quiet ones you have to watch. The subcrew decide to dive, and Fozzie jumps out of the box, diving onto the floor. Kermit says the submarine needs to dive, and pulls the bear back in. As far as naval combat goes, the two-minute fight between a couch and a cardboard box is more riveting than all 131 minutes of the movie Battleship. Skeeter and Scooter get into it over who's in charge. Skeeter only has to say one thing. Look at me. Look at me. I am the captain now. Captain Skeeter pulls rank and orders torpedoes to be fired. Scooter lays out a wooden plank and launches a roller skate wearing animal at the box. Direct hit and it leaves an animal-shaped hole on the side of the sub. The submarine's crew are launched from the box and they fall all around the room. They land so hard that there's blood and weirdo guts and a pig snout laying as debris. The Muppets are dead. The end. Nope, wait, they all get soft landings and Kermit's hurled far away from Gonzo's junk. The destroyer crew jump up and down and cheer in excitement as they have won the battle. Jolly good. When the door opens and a pair of green-striped legs enter, the kids gather to hear what Nanny has to say. She tells them they're being too loud. The next-door neighbor, Officer Carruthers, called to complain about the noise to Nanny. Imagine calling about a noisy nursery to No-Face Nanny. The caretaker, Nanny, explains that Carruthers is a policeman who works the graveyard shift. Kermit imagines a dark and tall officer standing in front of him, beating a nightstick in his hands. The frog is scared, knowing that he's going to be profiled for being green. I hear that's not easy. Nanny tells them to play quietly and civilly, and they won't have to worry. I wonder what Officer Carruthers will do if they don't keep it down. Is he going to come over and beat Muppet Heads? They're kids, more chaotic than any force of nature. You can't stop kids from kidding, but they're also animals, so muzzles all around, I say. In reality, Officer Carruthers should black out his windows and turn on a white noise machine. It'd do the trick and the kids could play. Solved it. But no one does that, and now Kermit's gonna be neurotic about every noise made in the nursery. Especially from Animal, who's naturally loud and obnoxious because he's, well, an animal. The kids imagine they could go to jail. Except for Fozzie, who thinks Officer Carruthers might slather them in peanut butter and forget the grape jelly. Sounds like a hell of a punishment. Piggy encourages them all to be civilized, and I can imagine she drinks her tea with her pinky finger out. Fozzie tries to keep Animal quiet through humor, but the bad jokes make Animal belly laugh for all the wrong reasons. Piggy grabs a book and sits up in the bay window to tell a story. Piggy casts herself as a princess who's run out of chocolates in her castle. She also casts Skeeter as her servant, and their well-known rivalry continues. If Skeeter fetches all of Piggy's foods, I hope Skeeter takes a cue from the help. The whole kingdom starts to shake, and Piggy runs to the window to see why. There's a huge purple dragon breakdancing its way towards the castle. Break into Dragon Boogaloo, you know, that old chestnut. Piggy has announcements posted that promise her hand in marriage to whomever defeats the dragon. That brings out the three bravest knights of the kingdom, Sir Kermit, Sir Fozzie, and Sir Gonzo. But Fozzie doesn't have a sword because Piggy's terrible and hiding it behind her back. Also, they're sounding out every letter in sword and pronouncing it as sword. That's not right, is it? Have I been saying it wrong all these years? Is up, down? Is Muppet Babies making me question reality? Whoa. Maybe they're the Matrix Babies. I'd pay to see that show. Fozzie's resigned to slay the dragon with the feather in his cap. When Gonzo says that's not possible, the bear turns to using the feather to write jokes. That could work. All of Fozzie's jokes bomb, and a bomb could take out a dragon. Waka waka waka. Fozzie steps up to the dragon, sweat pouring out of him. When the jokes fail, the dragon leaps into the sky and then slams its big purple butt down on the bear. It should have killed him, but it just pushes him into the ground. Gonzo tries to jump around bravely, waving his wooden sword. Sword? And gets batted into orbit by the dragon's tail. Piggy implores Kermit not to fight the dragon. And Kermit's okay with that because he's going to dance with the dragon. Kermit pulls out all his sick moves to the twang of surf guitar. Back in the nursery, that surf guitar gets to Animal and he dances up a storm. Or maybe a not-so-quiet riot. As Animal goes into full animal mode, the kids try to stop him. And the phone, get this, a landline, rings. From the other room, the kids can hear that it's Officer Carruthers calling. Thinking they're going to be arrested, they kill the lights and imagine themselves in black and white striped prison jumpers. Maybe black and white was the new orange back then. These jailbreakers get caught in a prison spotlight and they run for it. Gonzo opens the closet of nonsense and finds a clip from Star Wars playing. Even the Imperial fleet's closing in on the Muppets. Time to pay the bills.
Muppet Babies will return after these messages.
The galaxy explodes. The rebels return. You can relive it all with Kenner's Star Wars Return of the Jedi collection.
The fleet's diving in a hyperdrive.
Gotta move it.
New B-Wing fighters and B-Wing pilot action figures, each sold separately. Batteries not included.
Asteroid belt, lowering wings, hold on tight.
Test our laser cannon.
Check. Gyro cockpit stable. Now for some evasive action.
We're home free.
New B-Wing Fighter and B-Wing Pilot action figures each sold separately from Kenner's Star Wars Return of the Jedi collection.
Every second counts. Weekdays at noon.
Stay tuned for Saturday's Supercade with the adventures of Space Ace, Donkey Kong, Kangaroo, and Hubert, all right after the Muppet Babies. And now back to Muppet Babies.
Still in the prison breakout fantasy, Gonzo opens the nursery door to find Nanny standing there. She tells them that Officer Carruthers called again, because the loud antics woke him up. Again. Nanny tells them all to shut the F up again. I mean, she does if you really, really read between the lines. As soon as Nanny leaves, Animal is back to blathering on. Skeeter suggests using a sledgehammer to keep Animal quiet. They don't need a sledgehammer, that would be silly. They could just brick Animal in the back of the head and put him to sleep. Rolf suggests music to soothe the savage beast. While the dog pianist says it's a lullaby, it's a fast-rocking honky-tonk that I assume would wake up the cop next door. Good going, Rolf. You just defeated your own purposes. While the Muppets try to get Animal into a crib to sleep, the song is now like crack and Animal's bouncing off the walls. They all bust out instruments, including a drum for Animal. What a cluster this is. And you know what happens? Nanny bursts into the nursery. Go figure that loud music and drums would enrage the already sleep-deprived cop. All Nanny has to do is say one thing. Whoever makes a noise loses a toe. It worked on my son. I mean, sort of. He still can't walk straight, but he knows when to be quiet. Anyways, Nanny actually says that Officer Carruthers won't call anymore. If the babies are being loud, he's gonna come over. Gonzo has a plan to keep Animal quiet. He'll turn on the babysitter of the 80s, television. Now that I can relate to. Turning on the news, Animal bounces around when he hears about an earthquake. It shakes the bookshelves from the walls. Just the pinky toe, I swear he'll learn from it. They channel surf until they find a Superman ripoff and the blue weirdo enters into the TV as Super Gonzo. In Muppetropolis, ace reporter Clark Kent works for the world's biggest newspaper. Everything about it is big, even the building. It's so big, Gonzo, aka Clark, has to stand on a lobby ashtray to push the button for the elevator. Or maybe it's because he's only 2 feet tall. When we see an over-the-head shot, it's clear that this is an ashtray. There's cigarette butts in this thing on a Saturday morning kid show. Holy crap! Getting into the elevator, Cluck holds the door so Piggy Lane can ride with him. Cluck, during an inner monologue, shares that he's got the hots for the swine. He's aching for her bacon. When Piggy says that she's in love, Cluck opens up a can of slobbermouth on her hand. Turns out that Piggy's in love with Super Gonzo, not the very similar-nosed weirdo in the elevator. Also, this is harassment. But none of that matters when the elevator cable snaps on the 187th floor and they start to fall to their deaths. I guess they're getting the shaft. Cluck wants to get on top of the elevator to see what's going on. Piggy boosts him up so hard he crashes through the ceiling. With a quick change, he becomes Super Gonzo and sets out to stop the falling car. Instead, he crashes into the falling elevator while Piggy all but jumps his bones. This is also harassment. Somehow, no one stops the elevator and it crashes to the ground floor. Crawling out from under Piggy, Super Gonzo's super flat. Piggy crushed him down to two dimensions with her shanks. Super Gonzo flies off and Cluck Kent falls from the elevator roof. Piggy proceeds to tell Cluck how awesome Super Gonzo is, thereby crushing his feelings, and also encouraging him to reveal his true identity. But before that can happen, there's a city-shaking quake. But not really, it's just Animal jumping on the TV and chanting, "Boring!" Animal enters the TV screen like Harry Potter getting to the Hogwarts Express. In the Super Gonzo world, Animal is now giant ape-sized and kidnaps Piggy the same way this show is kidnapping the plot from King Kong, with brute force. Cluck needs a phone booth to change into Super Gonzo, but Fozzie's using the phone booth to tell his agent bad jokes. Apparently this phone has fax capabilities because the agent sends a rotten tomato through the phone line to splat in the bear's face. Finally, Fozzie gets out of the phone booth, and Super Gonzo can save the day. I must say, I find the Superman-themed show even more enjoyable when I remember that it's produced by Marvel. I wonder if DC ever tried to parody Marvel. Wait, they did. They totally did. DC made fun of Marvel when they tried to do their own cinematic universe. Good one, DC. You really had me laughing over that one. Super Gonzo takes to flight while still in the phone booth, tearing the superhero changing room out of the ground. The operator calls the booth, asking for 25 cents for this flight to continue. Having no money, the operator is forced to cancel the flight, slamming the booth back down to the street. Hearing Piggy call for help, Super Gonzo flies to the rescue, and he rescues her without any issues. Flying Piggy to safety, Gonzo goes back to beat on Animal's head. Before the bloodbath can begin, Super Gonzo is struck powerless by green crypto socks. Nanny is now impatiently in the fantasy. Nanny tells them that Officer Carruthers called, again. As Piggy and Kermit try to smother Animal to keep him quiet, Nanny reveals that the policeman is going to work. The babies can now make all the noise they want. They celebrate by promptly falling asleep. The end. Of the 107 episodes that ran over the 8 seasons of The Muppet Babies, 3 of them are considered to be the best of the best. Here now is a look as voted on by fans of the show. Number 3, Babes in Troyland, Episode 4 of Season 7. This 1990 episode found the babies learning about Greek mythology. In true Synergy fashion, clips from the 1986 movie Labyrinth are shown during the episode. True fans will know that Labyrinth was written, produced, and directed by Jim Henson. Sharp-eyed viewers may realize that the monsters were used from the 1974 spoof Flesh Gordon. Although this is sort of an odd choice to make for a kid's cartoon, as Flesh Gordon was rated R. Also because the characters are named Emperor Wang and Dr. Jerkoff. And there's a spaceship shaped like a penis. Oh yeah, and also because, you know, it's also porn. Number 2, Barely Alone Babies, Episode 3 of Season 8. The babies are freaked out when the news reports that burglar, Mad Dog Marvin, has escaped from prison. They're convinced that the thief is headed towards their house. When Nanny tries to get the house locked down due to an approaching storm, the babies' imaginations get the better of them. And number 1, Transcontinental Woo Woo, the premiere of Season 8. Statler and Waldorf bring over a train set similar to the Transcontinental Railroad. This 1991 episode found the babies recreating the railroad in their nursery and imaginations. It's fascinating to note that the top 2 episodes came from the final season, while number 3 came from Season 7. When most shows get to such an advanced age, the recycled plots or the quality recedes. According to the fans, the longer the Muppet Babies were on, the better they got. After these messages, we'll look at the impact, aftermath, and explore the legacy of Muppet Babies.
Now you can rip into delicious sun-kissed fruit rolls. Made with real grapes, real cherries, real oranges, real strawberries. Sun-kissed fruit rolls. Have you heard your fruit today? Now available in rip-roaring raspberry.
Go get 'em, Dragon Walker! Go!
Dragon Walker!
Shocker, Battle Armor, He-Man, and Skeletor and Merman each sold separately.
Separate this play, He-Man!
Batteries not included.
Watch that! Take that, He-Man!
May the mightiest power prevail!
New Dragon Walker vehicle for use with most Masters of the Universe figures. Action figures each sold separately. From Mattel.
This week on America's number one comedy music variety show, Hee-Haw! George Jones, Brenda Lee, the Moonshine Cloggers, plus brand new features, brand new faces, and brand new fun for the whole family. Of course, the whole Hee-Haw gang's still here, so why don't you drop in to country's finest hour, Hee-Haw!
Hee-Haw, Saturday at 7 on Channel 2. Gomer Pyle, weekdays at 8:30.
Was it a phenomenon? Well, it wasn't not a phenomenon. The series lasted for 8 seasons. It spawned a lot of merchandise that the kids went out and got. And it wasn't just limited to toys. There were things for all ages. For those who went to McDonald's, there were Muppet Babies toys. They started in 1987 and then returned in 1990, 1993, and 1994. The show went off the air in 1991. Why were there Happy Meal toys in 1994? It might be a mystery, but it happened. If you were a kid in the 1980s and wanted something with the Muppets on it, here's a few of the items you could have chosen. There were Muppet Babies albums, books, calendars, Christmas decorations, crafts, foods, games, Halloween costumes, health and beauty merch, housewares, piggy banks, no pun intended, puzzles, videos, and video games. And in 1985, Marvel, the joint producer of Muppet Babies, produced a comic book under their Star Comics imprint. When they started, they retailed for 65 cents. When the line ended in 1989, the cover price was a dollar. So just looking at the variety of merch and the volume of it, it's easy to see Muppet Babies was a hit. The other evidence is that the show went 8 seasons and ran 107 episodes. When you look at so many of the shows that came and went in the 80s, you will rarely find one that ran as long. If a show wasn't hitting its numbers in its time slot, one of two things happened. One, it was just canceled. There was always something waiting in the wings to take a time slot at any moment. Two, the show got moved around if the network thought it could do better at a different time. Look at the shows that had longevity in the 80s. I mean just the shows born in the 1980s. The longest running of them all was The Smurfs. It was born in 1981 and put to bed in 1989 after 9 seasons. The Smurfs don't win the top spot just because it ran for so many years, but also because there were times when the show ran a Smurfing 90 minutes at a time. This is an hour and a half of new content each week. It was like you were drowning in a sea of blue. The Smurfs get the top spot for running over 250 shows during that time. Coming in second in the Saturday morning race is The Real Ghostbusters, lasting 7 seasons and 140 episodes. That was thanks to the syndicated second season, where 65 of the 140 episodes came in that sophomore year. Likewise, Garfield and Friends ended with 120 episodes after 7 seasons, becoming the number 3 show of the 80s. Next up is Muppet Babies tied with Alvin and the Chipmunks, though I'd argue that Muppet Babies had the greater longevity because it ran 5 episodes more than Alvin. The Chipmunks started in 1983, Muppet Babies in 84, and both lasted until the 90s. Most of the Saturday morning epics were one and dones or had the strength to get 3 or 4 seasons deep. But 7 and up? That was an elite club. Those were the A-plus shows that brought the kids back week after week. And Muppet Babies, just based on number of shows, came in at number 4. If the Muppets hadn't been strong, they never would have lasted. So, what made it special? When the show premiered, it came fully formed. I credit writer Jeffrey Scott on that one. He developed it for TV. He wrote the pilot episode. He wrote all of season one. He made the template for what would come next. For his effort, he won an Emmy for Outstanding Animated Program in 1985 for the inaugural season. At the same time, he alone won a Humanitas Prize for the writing of the first season. The mission of the Humanitas is to recognize writers whose work explores the human condition in a nuanced, meaningful way which brings the global community closer. The show itself was nominated 16 times for various awards. Of those nominations, the show won 10. Just because it was an award winner doesn't mean it was good, just recognized by its peers. So what was it that brought the kids back? For me personally, I was raised on The Muppet Show and knew the characters. When I tuned in for the first time, I was about 8 years old. I wasn't a baby, but I related to the characters. I understood the insecurity of Kermit and Fozzie. I could relate to Piggy, who wanted to be more than she was. I was a kid that explored his imagination and created stories about my favorite TV shows. When I tuned in, I could relate. I was also tickled by the live-action clips the show used. I didn't own any movies at that time. My parents didn't even have a VCR yet. On special weekends, my parents would rent a VCR that was packaged in a red-colored, durable plastic case that came from U-Haul. Yes, we rented a VCR from the local moving authority. We also rented movies from them as well as 7-Eleven. When we rented movies as a family, I rarely had any say in the matter. That's probably why my earliest memories of movie rentals were Robin Williams in Moscow on the Hudson and Barbara Streisand's Yentl. I wasn't really interested in Russian defectors or Jewish women pretending to be men. If it was up to me, I'd have been all over Star Wars or maybe The Wrath of Khan. But it wasn't up to me. What to watch on Saturday mornings, that I controlled. On Saturday mornings, my mom slept in. My dad went to work early. I was an only child with a TV guide and hours of nothing to do. But you knew that, I say it at the top of every episode. When I watched Muppet Babies, I had a chance to see a clip of the Millennium Falcon or the Enterprise. Maybe I'd see the huge boulder from Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'd get the smallest glimpse of a pop culture giant and feel so happy. The movie would explode in the VCR of my brain, and it was like seeing it all over again, just from that little clip. For me, that was the power of the Muppet Babies. Well, and also how earnest Kermit was. I learned to share and play well with others from animated Muppets. So, were Muppet Babies a phenomenon? You bet they were. Muppet creator Jim Henson went on to direct the film Labyrinth, which was anything but a hit. Henson's son, Brian, recalled seeing his father grow depressed at the setback. The film would later become a cult classic and vindicate Henson's own feeling about the fantasy movie. Around the same time, Henson and his wife, Jane, became estranged and the two separated. Henson would state that he was so caught up in his work, he didn't have time for his family. In 1989, he entered into negotiations with the Walt Disney Company to sell the Muppets. Henson saw this as a chance to let Disney handle the business while he handled the creative side. Disney offered $150 million to give the Muppets a home. On May 14, 1990, Henson stayed in his New York home feeling ill. He had been battling some kind of bug for several days. That night, Jane showed up to check up on Henson. He confessed he might be dying, but didn't want to take time out of his schedule to go to the hospital. At 2 in the morning, on May 15th, Henson awoke coughing up blood. Jane spent 2 hours arguing with Henson to go to the hospital and finally convinced him. What happened next happened very quickly. Henson quit breathing. Doctors performed x-rays and found multiple abscesses in his lungs. Henson was placed on a ventilator, but his organs started to shut down. Less than 24 hours after arriving at the hospital, Jim Henson was declared dead at the age of 53. The cause was an infection that created bacterial pneumonia. The legacy of the Muppets continue to this day. Frank Welker, the voice of Kermit, has gone on to steadily dominate the world of voiceover work. He was Megatron on The Transformers and has returned to the role of Fred on various Scooby-Doo projects. If you can think of a mainstream animated show, there's a chance that Welker's been on it. As of right now, he's got nearly 900 credits to his name. Remember, this is just a list of shows he's been on. If you consider he generally plays multiple characters on each show, he has thousands of characters to his credit. Piggy actress Lori O'Brien went on to mostly live-action roles. She appeared here and there in one-shot appearances. As far as animation, she was featured in The Glow Friends Save Christmas, The Real Ghostbusters, and the 1995 Spider-Man The Animated Series. She's married to fellow actor Carl Weintraub. Greg Berg would go on to voice characters in Pound Puppies and The Legend of Big Paw. Berg would find even greater success as Donatello and Bebop on The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Also, being mentored by Dawes Butler, he stepped into the Master's shoes when he voiced Huckleberry Hound on Yo, Yogi. In an uncredited return to the Muppetverse, Berg also lent his voice as the stage manager in the 2011 film The Muppets. As of late, Berg has voiced video games and still works in movies and TV shows. While Muppet Babies was in production, Russi Taylor became in demand as an actress. She also went through changes in her personal life. In 1986, she auditioned for and got the role as the official voice of Minnie Mouse for Disney Studios. It was while voicing Minnie that she met Wayne Allwine, the voice of Mickey Mouse. In a fairy tale twist, the voices of Mickey and Minnie Mouse fell in love and got married in 1991. The two were together until his death in 2009. Throughout her career, Taylor was a part of many animated projects from Disney to The Simpsons. She was the voices of Huey, Dewey, and Louie on the original DuckTales. Speaking of DuckTales, Taylor credited Scrooge McDuck actor Alan Young as her voiceover mentor. On July 26, 2019, Taylor passed away after a long bout with colon cancer. She was 75. By the time Muppet Babies ended its run, actress Katie Lee had already been holding down a line of steady voice jobs. In 1984, she was cast as Danny Evans on Poochie. In the years that followed, Lee has been in demand and continued to work in the field of voiceovers. She voiced Fizzy and others on My Little Pony and Friends. In 1987, she was cast in the ongoing radio drama Adventures in Odyssey as Connie Kendall, a role she still voices. For Disney, she had roles on both The Adventures of the Gummy Bears and Darkwing Duck. In 1990, she met up again with Muppet Babies co-star Howie Mandel on his series Bobby's World. Howie Mandel continued his journey through Hollywood as a funny man. In 1990, he created the animated series Bobby's World, which ran until 1998. Mandel also voiced Bobby. In 2003, on the cusp of quitting show business, he was offered the role of host on an American adaptation of the game show Deal or No Deal. He turned it down several times but finally relented. He hosted a solid run of the show, which became a sensation. In 2010, Deal's network, NBC, offered Mandel a chance to be a judge on America's Got Talent. He accepted and replaced David Hasselhoff on the panel. As of this episode, he's the longest-running judge, having appeared on 11 consecutive seasons. Just prior to taking on Muppet Babies, Barbara Billingsley reprised her iconic role as June Cleaver on the new Leave It to Beaver. That show ran for 4 seasons and 102 episodes. In 1993, she reunited with Howie Mandel on his show Bobby's World. Billingsley would continue to act sporadically until 2003, when she officially retired. On October 16, 2010, Billingsley passed away from polymyalgia at her Santa Monica home. She was 94 and survived by 2 children. The The legacy of the Muppet Babies is that it just might be timeless. Yes, some of it may not have aged well, but the lessons that the production team meant to put in it still endure. It's a colorful cartoon. My kids will sit and stare at it and relate to what they see. They enjoy it for what it is, despite the fact that it's not a modern cartoon. As evidenced by the Muppet Babies Happy Meals that hit the market 2 and 3 years after the series ended, the show remained popular. The Muppets themselves have come and gone, but each new generation gets to discover them. At the time I write this, there are currently 2 Muppet shows in existence. The Muppets Now is on Disney Plus and finds our felt friends dealing with each other via Zoom during the pandemic. And then on Disney Junior, back in 2018, the Muppet Babies were revived. Most of the characters are the same, except that Skeeter and Scooter are occasional guest stars. There's now Summer Penguin that's permanently in the nursery with the others. The Muppets have been brought into the 21st century as the show is now computer generated. Oh yeah, and the objects on Nanny's stockings now have something to do with what the episode is about. The kids use their imagination and travel to far-off places. From what I've seen, there's no clips ripped from the latest adventure movies being used. This is likely a good thing. Very recently, series developer and writer Jeffrey Scott filed a lawsuit against Disney for their version of Muppet Babies. His lawsuit claims Disney used his original series Bible for the new computer-generated series. It is possible. There are many similarities, overlap with the characters, and the fact that they use their imagination. Scooter and Skeeter aren't regulars, but have shown up here and there. Scott is going after the copyright owner for a development fee that was not paid to him. The 1984 Muppet Babies will likely never be released on DVD or streaming. This is due to the rights of the clips and the fact that CBS produced the show back in the day. The new Muppet Babies could be resurrected as the concept is owned by Disney, who owns the Muppets. Ironically, the original series was produced by Marvel, also owned by Disney. And the clips centering around Lucasfilm movies like Star Wars and Indiana Jones are also owned by Disney. As far as I can tell, the original series in its entirety is owned by CBS. But they can't show it or release it on DVD unless they get permission from Disney to use those clips. So, the 1984 Muppet Babies will likely grow old in a vault, never to be remastered, streamed, or released as a box set. That's a shame, really. The people involved are passing away or growing old. Someone is missing the chance to collect commentaries and history and let us in on them. The legacy of the Muppet Babies is that it finished fourth in the great 80s Saturday morning race. It's fondly remembered. Today's kids have their own relatable version. And who knows? Maybe Disney will just acquire CBS and give us kids of the 80s that box set we'd all enjoy. Until next time, thanks for tuning in. You know, I think it would be appropriate if someone else had the last word on this episode. Thank you for joining us at the Saturday Morning Podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe. If you could do us a favor, leave a 5-star review wherever you get your episodes. Check out Twitter at SatMornPod for announcements and other cartoony things. We're also on Instagram at SatMornPod, the official source for all the behind-the-scenes stories of the podcast. Got a minute? Check out the Saturday Morning Minute on YouTube. We offer quick looks at all those great 80s shows. And what about you? Do you have any vintage Saturday morning memories? If so, email your story to satmornpod@hotmail.com. We could read it on the next episode. If you'd like to support us so we can make more of these things, find us at patreon.com/saturdaymorn. You'll find a stockpile of Season 1 bonus content as well as new features added monthly. You'll also have a chance to win behind-the-scenes prizes as well as being given email priority.